Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Regional Roundup with Leslie Lopez, regional correspondent with the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, you're in the breakfast huddle with Elliot Danker and Manisha Tank, and it's time for our regional roundup.
Ah, I love this segment. So many countries around the region, they've been in lockdown for months, and now it seems that there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Plans are being made on how to come out of lockdown and live safely with the virus around until a vaccine is found.
So let's talk about the latest strategies, the latest shift in measures. Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez is on the line with us. Leslie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Marisha.
Good morning. Good chatting with you. Let's start off with between Singapore and Malaysia. I think news this week was that Malaysians in Singapore allowed to return home to attend funerals of immediate family members. They don't have to go through a mandatory 14-day quarantine. I believe they can only be there for like, what, 3 hours or something like that. So could you tell us, you know, when do you think it is likely that the mandatory quarantine will be lifted, you know, for all Malaysians and Singaporeans, you know, at least between the two countries?
You know, this phase easing that both governments are strictly adhering to, I think will go on for some time. And the mandatory quarantine will be in place until both sides of the causeway get comfortable with that compliance among its citizens is high. I think it's also the most responsible approach. If you consider the latest loosening of controls for Malaysians in Singapore to attend funerals of immediate family members, it is attached to the number of pretty strict conditions. Those returning to pay their last respects need to be in full personal protective equipment or PPE, and they must be accompanied by frontliners. This is cumbersome to start with, and the red tape involved surely will be time-consuming and prohibitive. I think what's more, the government in Malaysia noted that it will be up to Singapore to quarantine those when they head back, which would mean that the time spent here to attend funerals would be very restrictive and controlled. So clearly, even these concessions show, they might show some empathy, but they're pregnant with safeguards, and I still think they underscore how serious the situation remains.
Well, meanwhile, Leslie, and good morning to you, Malaysia's health ministry has changed its protocol. They're saying they'll now discharge COVID-19 patients even if they test positive for the coronavirus after 14 days. I mean, when you read something like that, when you hear something like that, it seems really odd. So just walk us through the reasoning behind the decision.
Well, you know, the Malaysian response is largely premised on a recent report by the World Health Organization, which stated that those who have passed the 14 days of treatment, chances of them infecting others are almost zero. So this differs from previously, before samples were collected from patients just before they would be discharged. If traces of the virus were found, they would be kept in hospitals until the test came back negative. The new findings, I think, by the WHO are helping medical services deal better with the situation as they focus on those who need help the most. I think this is a good sign. The more experts discover, the better responses can be designed to deal with the crisis. Clearly, you know, we're seeing something positive now. You know.
We're chatting with Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez. Leslie, let's head over to Indonesia. Over there, we've got the World Health Organization urging Indonesia to stop treating COVID-19 patients with those two malaria drugs, chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. The country, of course, has been one of the world's biggest advocates of those two malaria drugs. So how is Indonesia then going to shift its treatment strategy?
Well, you know, Malaysia's at one end of the spectrum in dealing with the pandemic, which has been fairly positive. Indonesia, with its huge population, many limitations when it comes to testing, also treating those infected by the virus, is at the other and very distressing end of handling the crisis. And we've spoken about the many challenges, you know, in recent weeks about the challenges facing President Widodo's government. I guess against this backdrop, it's understandable that the government could be looking for quick fix. And you can't blame Jakarta for prescribing the malaria drugs that were, you know, these were touted even by President Donald Trump. The country has ramped up production since March, granting two licenses. But now I think experts believe that these drugs do more harm than good. Really, I wish we could be on the ground in Jakarta doing reporting on this, because they're looking for a quick fix and they really need one.
Yeah, they really do. But sometimes in our desperation for quick fixes, we sometimes jump at the wrong thing, don't we?
Mm. Exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's take it to Thailand. And the parliament there held the first day of a five-day debate, which is meeting for the first time since a partial lockdown was implemented. That was back in March. Now, the opposition there in Thailand has sharply criticised the Thai government on its $85 billion stimulus package. It is, of course, the country's biggest ever, and it's been called No One Left Behind. But it's left many millions in the lurch. Can you explain?
Thailand, like a lot of other countries, us, is struggling too. Tourism is down. They've relied for a long time on the tourists from China. All of that is completely come to a standstill. As long as inbound flights are banned and prohibited, I think tourism is going to remain where it is. It's almost come to a, you know, virtual halt. The Thai government has come up with this huge amount, largest ever for the region's second largest economy. But, you know, questions will always be there. How the money is dispensed, who's getting it. And it is also for government that it doesn't have that much support today. It has a slim majority. People have been, generally Thais have been unhappy with the government in its response to handling the crisis. And I think there are going to be many questions in the weeks ahead on how this money is going to be spent. There's a lot of criticisms about leakages in the government. So I think these things are going to come under the spotlight in the coming days.
I tell you what, Leslie, I love this last story that we're going to talk about. And for this, we head over to the Philippines. Now, if I was a student in the Philippines, I would be cheering. That's because the president there, Rodrigo Duterte, says he's not going to allow students to go back to school until a coronavirus vaccine is available. And we know that could take a while. Some countries have already, of course, resumed in-person classes. Some are going to do so in stages and whatnot. Now, you've got classes for more than 25 million primary and secondary students shut down since March. I mean, for the adults, does this sound like a sensible idea? And is there any potential impact in the long run?
Well, you know, I guess when it comes to children who need protection the most, I don't think anyone can fault President Duterte for stating his stand. Of course, the position has drawn detractors who insist that the government must make modifications to the learning system, you know, to prevent more disruptions. But these things are easier said than done, especially in countries like Philippines and also Indonesia. Public schools, you know, typically normally run from June to April in the Philippines, but the authorities, as we know, pushed it back. And I think in order to ease classroom crowding, you know, it's going to be difficult in the months to come for Philippines. And, you know, e-learning is tough. You've got very many impoverished families. So, but getting kids to school is probably going to be one of the most dangerous things, actually, at this point. So it's going to be some time, but I'm sure they're going to come up with new measures, you know, that will help get kids back to some form of learning. And that would be very urgent for them to do.
All right. Yeah, it is true. In transport, access to digital devices, it's a tough one down there. But nonetheless, a very bold move. Okay, we've been speaking with Leslie Lopez, Straits Times regional correspondent. Leslie, always good chatting with you. Thank you again. You take care and stay safe.
You too. Thanks, Michelle.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.